invite me here to present this work. So I know those two things, like topological insulator and flavor physics, it's not really look, they're quite related, but I'm gonna get into the story of it. So this talk is basically based on two papers here. One is this space-time as topological insulator, another one is this little flavor from this year. In collaboration with David B. Kaplan and Nelson, who are both in University of Washington. So here's the outlines. So first I'm going to introduce some of the topology of the surface mode, which has some universal property of all those three things. The first is the quantum Hall. It has something to do with the topology, and it describes the surface mode. Another one is the chiral fermion lattice. And then the third is the thing I did with David Kaplan. It's about using this topological integer as the number of the family of the flavors. And it's also a trisomy number. It will become more clear after I get there. And then next, I'm going to introduce some of the puzzles of the flavors, basically like a CKM matrix and mixing angles and fermion, quarks and lepton masses. And then here is a major part of this talk, is I'm going to introduce this model we did. It's a deconstructed model which combines deconstruction and the little Higgs. So we call it the little flavor. You can see the connection just from the name. And this model has certain interesting features. So first, it's a very low scale model, which it shares this scale the same as little Higgs, which means it's 10 to 20 TeV. And also, but it naturally has this suppression of the flavor change in neutral current without being put in by hand. And it also have some flavor symmetry, which is a U3 global symmetry. So let's look at what's quantum Hall effect. So quantum Hall effect basically discovered has been a really hot topic in condensed matter since beginning of this century. And it's basically the first discovered in this 2+1 system, which you have a disk of sample, and you look at the boundary of the system, you're going to get this massless mode. So what they did, because we know normal Hall effect is when you turn down magnetic field in the bulk, and then all the electrons in the bulk fill all the Landau levels, and the bulk become gapped. But when you look at, so normally people would think that there's no conductivity in the whole system, but when you look at the boundary, there's actually a conductivity, which is Hall conductivity. It's sigma xy. So normal conductivity is sigma xx. It means you put electric field along x direction, you're gonna get a current along x direction. Sigma xy means you put the electric field on x direction, you're gonna get a current on y direction. That's a Hall conductivity. And in this gapped system, when it shows some, this is a diagram people normally would show when they're talking about quantum Hall effect. See, you can see all the Landau levels here. The electron in the bulk fill all the Landau levels. But there's also a massless surface mode, which is conducting. The conductivity is an integer times some universal constant. And this integer is like 1, 2, 3, 4. That's the integer in integer quantum Hall effect. Well, if there's any questions, you can just ask. No. So there's also fractional in quantum Hall effect, which involving some interactions inside the band, but this is only the integer. So this integer, when people first find this conductivity, they're surprised because when they measured all the conductivities, and this is like the integer up to 10 to -6 or something. And So normally, because your sample would have those defects or impurities, so you won't expect that your measurement, your conductivity could be that quantized up to 10 to minus 6. That's because this mode is a topological mode, so it won't be localized by your defect in the sample. So this quantum Hall effect could actually be described in a domain wall model, which is something people in particle physics and in string theory, they have been studied since probably 1976, first proposed by Jackie and Rabi. It's basically saying you have a 2 plus 1D field theory with the Dirac fermion, and you turn on a spatially variating mass term, and there is going to be a massless chiral fermion located at the wall of this domain wall. I don't know why this thing is happening. So this domain wall physics actually is the field theory behind the quantum Hall effect. So we cannot only do that, because normally in laboratory and they have quantum Hall is a 2+1 system, but you can also do it in 4+1 system. And it's, here is what I said before. I mean, you have a Dirac fermion, this is your action, and you have a theta is a spatially variating mass, and it's like a positive at one side along x5 and negative at the other side. So you require it's a 4D Dirac. You solve this action, and you require there's a 4D Dirac. It satisfies the 4D Dirac equation. Then you left with only the 5D part. And then you solve that, you can get this is the profile along the 5D. So all your fermion is localized at this defect, domain wall. And it's a chiral fermion. It distinguishes the left and the right, because your gamma 5, if you use in some certain bases, you have like a 1. If you in your chiral bases, they have 1 at the upper corner and the minus 1 at the lower corner. So this is what normally people call a topological insulator, because in vacuum you have topological trivial part and there's a topological part, which in this language it would say the mass goes to negative, the negative part, negative mass, positive mass, and they have this interface here, and the boundary will have some conducting fermion, which is your chiral fermion. And also, that's also the thing which gave rise to the sigma xy, the Hall conductivity. Well, the only difference is this is in 5D, but that story is in 2+1D. So, but you could write down the same, okay. So this is also the similar story happened on lattice. So people do lattice simulation of QCD, they need chiral symmetry. So what they do is they actually generate a five-dimensional lattice with this fifth dimension is like actual dimension, and they put this spatially variating mass term on this fifth dimension, and so they got a chiral fermion on 40 every 4D slice, well, on this 4D slice. So this is work by D.B. Kaplan in 1992, and this is probably it's one third of lattice QCD community are using because they need chiral symmetry. There are some questions? Okay, so using this kind of domain wall things, and they not only, I mean, you can count like how many fermions on this interface, on this domain wall, and this fermion number could actually be changing. So we name this fermion number NF, and this NF could be changing discontinuously when you tune those coefficients. So if you have 5D lattice, by tuning those coefficients, the mass divided by W here, and you tune this, and you can change the number of chiral fermion on this interface. So if you get one, it's like this. But if you are tuning those parameters continuously, you're gonna get like your number of fermion numbers could be actually be changing.
And you said mentions of that formula. Is n equal to m over every w root?
This is the number of m over w, and this is an, yeah. So when you tune this thing, you just gradually, and it jumps at every point.
Is there a lattice spacing involved in the, to get a dimensionless number? Right, because m has mass dimension 1.
Mm-hmm.
W has mass dimension minus 1, I guess. Right? So m over
yeah.
W.
Yeah, it should be like over a or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
And really, it switches from one left-handed to four right-handed.
Yeah.
What happens in the vicinity of like m over w close to one? Are all of those modes getting light but not zero mass? Or
so they're all the number of massless mode. So those are like a massless mode.
Right. So if you get very close to one, let's say at one minus epsilon,
yeah,
do you have four right-handed modes that are
no
mass? I know they're not massless, but
I think no. I mean, except those Carroll modes, you actually only have Dirac modes. So, yeah. There's some discontinuity there. It's more like, well, if you read the paper, you can see there's the equation solved and the root actually change at these numbers. So it's, I should probably put that diagram here, but it's, it's actually if you draw these things and the fermion is actually located at every corner and you're drawing this allowed regime, it's like this. So it's just simply not allowed. So it's
allowed means allowed to be massless or
allowed to exist.
To exist, period.
Yeah. So it actually, if you look at this thing, there's only one left hand or one right hand allowed, just because the other one is not normalizable. It's like exponentially grow. Or so if you actually separate them, if you are looking at a finite system, they actually have left hand here and right hand here. And there's some overlapping between them. So it's just a way you can separate the left hand and right hand fermion. Okay. So this number I just showed like a 4 or 6. I mean, they're not necessary to be 4 or 6. It actually depends on your lattice structure. If you have a triangular lattice, you could probably get 2 or 3 or something. But you have square lattice, so you get a 4 and a 6. So this number, this 4 and 6, the NF, it's actually a Cher-Simon number. So it came out of the Cher-Simon operator. So because in 4D theory, you can actually put in a Cher-Simon operator. You have like an anomaly term, which is the derivative of the Cher-Simon operator. And if it's come from you integrating out of those, you're integrating out of this propagator.
Now there's a gauge field in the problem, right? So you're saying you couple the fermion to the gauge field, and you integrate over the fermion, and you get this thing?
This is a fermion propagator. You integrate all the fermion because all those like a massive fermion, and when you're integrating all them, you get a Cher-Simon number in front of your this Cher-Simon operator. Well, Cher-Simon like.
What's confusing is when you say Cher-Simon, I'm thinking that's a thing that's built in gauge fields. And
yes.
So far, I haven't seen any gauge fields. So I'm supposed to think that there's a gauge field coupled to everything. I'm tracking things as a function of that and the effect of that.
When you get a Cher-Simon number, you need a gauge field, right? But that's right.
And so in the quantum Hall case, what happened is that the bulk was not gauge invariant because of the Cher-Simon term, and so that you needed the surface modes to the anomaly in the surface modes kind of made it gauge invariant because it canceled the boundary variation of the bulk action. And I gather there's a similar story happening here at 5 dimensions.
They're pretty similar. I mean, in 5 dimensions you have a Cher-Simon term, right? And when you're integrating, but this Cher-Simon term is like the you can write it as a derivative of your anomaly term. So they have this dimensional hierarchy. You can reduce it. You have a Chersamen term or anomaly, like alternating from even to all dimensions. So you could go from 5 to 4. You can also go from 3 to 2. So
you need to, for the rest of what you're going to say, is it important to track the lattice baggage as well, or is for the next rest of the talk sufficient to think that I've got a Chersamen's continuum contribution in 5 minutes?
I don't get your question. I'm sorry.
you're casting this in a lattice framework, and I'm wondering if that's important for what you're going to do.
For flavor model?
Yeah, for your model.
Yeah, we have, I'm going to get into that. I mean, we have a deconstructed version. So the gauge field is not normal gauge field. It's a...
There will be a lattice.
Yeah, there will be a lattice. So, but you can also do this in continuous. That's fine. So, like, you could have a Chersamen term in your continuous field theory or something. So, I should probably write down Chersamen term here, but this coefficient is what's in front of Chersamen term. It's the same for, it's also the number of this quantum Hall, n. So remember the conductivity of quantum Hall, they have an n in front. This is this Chersamen number. This is also the number I'm going to use to explain, like, there we have three families of flavors. And this number is actually, if you just look at this, it's a winding number in momentum space. So my main point of this, so for flavor physics, because we're in a 4D world, so we need a fifth dimension, and we write down a dispersion relation, which has a higher order terms in 5D, and after that story I showed before, and you reduce to a 4D fermion, and you're going to get this localized mode on this 4D brain here. So by having a complicated dispersion relation, you can get n equal to 3. This is a continuous version of it. So, but when it comes to particle physics, if you have an infinitely extended actual dimension, you're going to run into some problem because, first it's your gauge field. Because we have this Chersamen-like story, we need a gauge field. If we have a gauge field on propagating in fifth dimension, then it cannot do it. It will run into something. You will have a Landau pole or something. So you need to compactify it. So when you compactify it, you have these two wall things, one left-hand and one right-hand fermion stuck in the wall. So this is actually what happened in lattice simulation. They have left-hand fermion on one wall and right-hand fermion on the other wall, but luckily QZD has left-handed and right-handed quarks. So they're fine with it. But but in this case, somehow it doesn't really give you a standard model. So what we did is we compactify it, and we did a projection. So this whole model, if we are getting like three family of fermions this way, first we don't really explain which the three is coming from. We need a UV completion to really tell you why there are three. It's like when people are doing string theory, they have this, they have a complicated orbit from top-down approach and get three, but we don't have that. So what this is shows the compactify and projection story. So you have left-hand fermion, right-hand fermion. What you did is you killed one of them by projection. So the next thing we did is we go to a discrete model. But on discrete manifold, there's something different from continuous one, is you cannot really get like a one fermion at one point. The left-hand minus right-hand zero mode equal to this how many fixed one of your manifold. So you can think this circle as actual dimension. So they're like a three circle glued together and give you three fixed points that will have three zero mode here. And then we do a projection along this axis. So related all those two black dots together and put it back here. So now it looks like this. It's good because it begins to look like a Moose diagram you would do in Little Higgs, but it hasn't really get into, this is not a Moose diagram. But the next thing, what we did here is, so let's just summarize what we did. So we look at this topological insulator model with actual dimension. So we think we could use it to explain flavor, like why we have three families. But we also have all the other problems. So we have to go to this compact actual dimension with orbit four. And this number of the family, we think it's the same number in front of the quantum Hall, integer quantum Hall's effect. It's that integer. But that depends on the higher dimensional theory. It also depends on how you complete your theory in how you complete UV and how you write down a complete UV theory to give you this nonlinear dispersion relation. So
confuse me a little bit here. So the statement that the integer and the Kern-Simons term is related to number of families, I think I get that because that's a statement about the anomalies canceling the failure of the bulk to be gauge invariant. Because of the Kern-Simons action is not gauge invariant when there's a boundary, right? But so should I be thinking that the gauge field we're talking about is a standard model gauge field, or is this a flavor group of some sort?
Well, we're going to put in gauge field in a different way rather than this all gauge field.
But the one that you're making this flavor argument with.
It's true, like you could only see that integer from the in front of a Kern-Simons term, but if you don't, but you could also see it by looking at how many chiral fermions you have. That way, you don't need a gauge field to really see this number.
But I'm just trying to track the same statement, and I get it if there's a gauge field, and I'm just trying to position myself for where you're going.
With this gauge field?
Yeah, what is that gauge field? Is it something which I know in the standard model, or is it something else?
Good question. So we actually thought for a while how are we going to put in gauge field that lead to the next part of this talk, the deconstruction. We put in gauge field we just put like a 40 gauge field on sites, and we connect them with nonlinear sigma model field. It's like the next part.
But it's not the gauge field that gives you doubles and Zs, it's something different.
Which gauge field you're talking about?
Oh.
It's not a Kern-Simons gauge field. There's no Kern-Simons gauge field in this whole story.
Well, you're just asking whether you're going to limit your gauge field content to SU2 cross U1 cross SU3, or it's going to be a wider gauge field.
We have a bigger gauge group, that's true. Okay. It breaks down to standard model SU2 cross U1.
And it's part of that bigger group of flavor group?
No.
No.
Okay. Depends on what you name flavor group. We have the symmetries, but it's not a gauge.
I'm just asking, does it act on the up quark versus the top quark?
Up quark versus, you mean the
flavor as I would meet it in the standard model, is that going to be in the end of the day a gauge? Things that relate those are going to be gauge.
It's not a gauge field. It's a global symmetry.
Okay.
It's not a gauge. Well, okay, it could be a gauge field at higher. Well, the thing is, whether you call it global symmetry or a gauge symmetry, you could be a gauge field at higher dimension, but you spontaneously break down to global symmetry. We don't have our theory only works at below probably 20 TeV, so we don't know what kind of UV completion put in there. It could be gauge at higher dimensions.
But nothing you're going to use. You're not going to do anything at lower energies that uses that.
But our flavor group is not gauge. Okay. So, finally, let's talk about particle physics. And there's this flavor things we're all confused about. And so first is why there's three generations of all of them. And from quark to leptons, there seems there's some connections, but no one really identified them. And there's many proposals trying to resolve this problems by using new symmetries or actual dimensions or some strong couple dynamics to explore this three generation thing. And also there's many numbers in flavor problem. There's CKM matrix, which has this mixing angle. There's also this whole bunch of quark mass, which shows a large hierarchy, which could be like 10 to minus 5. Although in standard model, these numbers are all put in by hand. Although you can see the Yukawa coupling, CP violation, they're all like order one, but you still show this large hierarchical pattern among flavors. And also there's really small flavor change in neutral current. So all the flavor changing things are actually encoded in CKM. And other than that, there seems like no flavor changing things, or really small. This whole thing is really confused. If you look at the lower dimensional theory, you could actually write down a whole bunch of operators which gave you the flavor change in neutral current. But those operators are not allowed. So if you want to build a theory of flavor physics, you look at the scale, suppress those flavor change in neutral current, and you look at the data in nature, and the scales is like 10 to 40 eV. So that means it's out of the range of the LHC. Or even next generation collider. So it seems like there's no way to really probe this flavor problems in current energy scale. Well, this is a side note here. When people look at this, they actually lead to the discovery of the charm quark, because you need the third family to complete this box diagram. And so, okay. So let's talk about a little background knowledge about deconstruction and little flavor. So the first is using nonlinear sigma model field to explore to model Higgs is from 1985 from Kaplan and Georgi composite Higgs model. And then there's this story about deconstruction, which I'm going to get into details later. And there's After people did the construction, they find this is it, which lead to this little Higgs story, which explain why Higgs mass, which resolve the hierarchy problem, explain why Higgs mass is so little under at current scale, and so which is an alternative to SUSY. So this deconstruction. It say this lattice is a compact new dimension which is generated by a gauge group. So naively to see it, if you look at your Moose diagram or a quiver diagram, this line around, you can think about that as extra dimension. So people use that to see because there's so many symmetries in that model to protect the Higgs mass. So if you only break a subset of all those symmetries in one term and break the other set of symmetry in another term and only break the whole symmetry with multiple term combined, that way you won't get radiative correction to Higgs mass at the certain loop order. So this is the story of the little Higgs. And so that way, because you only get Higgs mass at a higher loop order, so the Higgs mass is actually suppressed, rather than you can just get it at one loop order, has a divergence, and F is your cutoff scale. So this way you can bring this cutoff scale low, but still have a little Higgs without much fine tuning, just because the Higgs mass is protected. So it won't be generated unless you break all the symmetries. Okay. So what we learned from deconstruction and Little Higgs. So the first, when those people propose deconstruction, they say this is a new way of looking at actual dimension. It's not a real actual dimension. And well, you can completely understand the actual dimension just by using the 4D theory. And also, that way, it's because we only observe 4D gravity in our real world. There's really small deviation from 4D gravity. So if you are going to have an actual dimension, then you might run into some troubles. But if you use this deconstruction theory, you can just do everything in 4D and put a 4D gravity there, but still have actual dimension in some component of your whole theory. And also, so this is also a different solution because people have been trying to solve this hierarchy problem to Higgs mass, and one proposal is SUSY, so they cancel the fermionic contribution, cancel the bosonic contribution. But in this Little Higgs is, they have a fermion has a partner which has the same spin, so it's also a fermion. That fermion cancels the contribution from another fermion, saying top quark here, because top is the heaviest one, which is the worst if you count radiative correction to Higgs mass. And they call it a little moose, and here is the little moose. So I talked about this quantum Hall topological insulator flavor model. I also talk about this moose diagram people use in Little Higgs. So what we did in the second paper, Little Flavor, we combined those two. So this is the moose diagram we used in the paper. And if we look at two different theory, so normally Little Higgs works is you have a large symmetry, as I said, and you break symmetry with some certain terms, and only all those terms combined give you a Higgs mass. This is the Little Higgs story. And we also have flavor model, say, example, Frog and Nelson. And you have a flavor symmetry, and you only break those symmetries with certain spurions. That way you give quark masses. So without those symmetry breaking, you would have degenerate quark mass. You would have no mixing angle just from this. So maybe those two could combine together. And also, if you look at this actual dimensional deconstructed orbit board, it looks like Moose diagram, which people are using in deconstruction. So okay, here is some details of flavor model. So this is what I said here. And so there's also problem because people have been trying to fit like a neutrino mixing matrix, PMNS matrix, into certain discrete symmetry and all sorts of things. But the model is not very predictive. That's one problem. And also, they don't see much about the right-hand flavor structure, because right hand is like a singlet of the quark or leptons. But they have a way to explore why all those flavor changing neutral current is suppressed, because it's suppressed by this symmetry breaking scale. And it's also related this CKM matrix or neutrino mixing matrix to certain set of symmetry. So this is some detail of how Little Higgs model works. So in this original composite Higgs model, they use this scale F, and Higgs is transformed linearly under this symmetry. So this way, they won't have any potential. And you put a spurion there, only two spurions work together will completely break that symmetry, which gave you a Higgs potential. And yeah, Higgs mass is one term in Higgs potential. So the new physics can start at TeV scale because this new top partner is like this and cancel the quadratic divergence to Higgs. The thing they did is because top quark is the heaviest one, so they only introduce this top partners, but principally can introduce all the partners to those fermions. Okay, here's our model, which is little flavor. We combine those two. One is little Higgs, another is flavor. So this is some specific detail of the model. So we put this, we introduce SU4 multiplet, and we put this is standard model SU2 doublet, and this is a standard model SU2 singlet. And we put Dirac, a whole Dirac fermion on black sides, and only chiral fermion, this is left chiral fermion, and an incomplete multiplet on white sides. This specific choice is actually come from projection of the one, because remember black sides is actually two of them. They're like a mirror to each other and their projection, and white sides at a fixed point. So the projection kill half of the component in white side, but keep the whole Dirac fermion on black side. So originally they have all Dirac fermion, the four multiplets on every side, but projection kill of them, some of them. So this way we can still, so after projection, we still have three massless chiral fermion, which is our family, which is our standard model fermion. So we also put a gauge group SU2 cross U1 on each side. Well, on black sides and one white side, all the gauge group on black sides are the same, and all gauge group on white sides are the same. They're all SU2 cross U1. And they're gonna break down to standard model SU2. So this is our gauge field. Well, okay, no, this is the link field is a nonlinear sigma model field. It's the same link field which people use in little Higgs. So in this link field, we have two Higgs doublet, just as what happened in SUSY. There's upper type Higgs and down type Higgs, and they're all embedded in this sigma, which is the link field. The whole thing is the SU4 nonlinear sigma model field. So it's a 4x4 unitary matrix, and so standard model this gauge field on site. There's gauge field on site. There's also link field, and the gauge field could be embedded into this link field at the upper corner. This is SU2, and this T3 is the U1. The diagonal group of this SU2 cross U1 is standard model gauge group. The link field Higgs the GW cross GB to only one set of SU2 cross U1. There are some questions. So this is, I mean, the whole, that thing is basically what happened. It's very similar to what happened in little Higgs. It's, so sigma field spontaneously break this SU2 cross U1 to diagonal SU2 cross U1. And this diagonal SU2 cross U1 is standard model gauge field. And symmetry breaking scale is 1.5 TeV. And we assume there's a cutoff scale at 4 pi f. So because it's spontaneous breaking, the gauge boson, which got eat some of the nonlinear sigma model field and become heavy. So this is our new gauge boson. So except the standard model W and Z, we have a new set of four gauge boson, which are like a W, Z, and A. Well, Z and Z prime, we'll call it an A. and we have this whole thing parameterized as all those pseudo ghost and bottom. And there's this heavy axion SU2 cross U1 is our heavy W and Z, and they ate some of the, those pseudo number Godelson boson and the Higgs doublet, and it's just works as standard model Higgs and further break down this standard model as U2 cross U1 to U1. So only one massless photon. So. So that's the Higgs part of the story. And there's also a flavor part of the story is here. So we have a U3 symmetry acting, rotating those three cells together. And we also have a SU4 symmetry, which works on that multiplet. Those two symmetry hasn't been broken now. And we put this mass term on Dirac mass on those fermions, which is this term. And this fermion on from black side could only talk to the fermion on white side through sigma field. So you write down the black side fermion, right side fermion, and couple them through sigma field to be gauge invariant.
Sorry, can you just go back to that? So are you imagining the same mass? So the mass term is universal independent of which black site you're on? Are the lambda f's also supposed to be universal?
Yeah, okay. There's only one link field.
But?
So there's like exactly U3 here.
Okay, exactly. So this is exactly U3.
Okay, yeah, there's also SU4 here. That SU4 on black side is also not broken. So there's a funny thing here. If you, okay, to be more explicitly, you write all those down explicitly in terms of upper and down type quark, and your phi is Higgs. And then it seems like when Higgs get a valve, it would give fermion a mass. But that's not the story, because even after Higgs get a valve, there's still three massless Carroll fermion and three massive Dirac fermion. So this is like some very surprising thing for us, because even the same that normal story is like after electroweak symmetry breaking, your fermion would get a mass, but here is not. That's just because there's so many symmetries in this story. There's still this SU4 symmetry would not break. Well, there's this U3 symmetry and this SU4 symmetry. Those two together actually protect the fermion to get any mass even after electroweak symmetry breaking. So there's a way to see it if you just integrating all this big psi, and then you get that. And this is actually equal to zero, because you see this is from upper corner, this is lower corner. And the sigma field actually cancels, times to unitary, and the thing is, whole thing actually goes to zero. So what did we get? We write down the Higgs coupling to the fermion, but that actually doesn't really give any fermion a mass. We still have exactly U3 symmetry. So the only thing could give Higgs a mass is by breaking them by spurion, which is like a Frog and Nelson picture. You break the whole symmetry hierarchically, and it's not through spontaneous breaking of Higgs, and then that way you give fermion mass. So this is like the last piece of the story. And so we put this spurion breaking pattern here, which break U3, and which has this U3 breaking pattern. We also have this spurion which break SU4. So those two combined break those two symmetry together, and then which that way could give a fermion mass finally. So this is a non-symmetrical term we put in from from all those terms, we actually have the we could have the flavor structure. So you see, I mean, if you have fermion mass just from Higgs couple to fermion, then there's no way to really put this Frog and Nelson picture in, because you've already got a fermion mass by coupled to the Higgs. But now we have massless fermion even after it coupled to Higgs. And all the fermion mass is actually from symmetry breaking. So it's like you break symmetry to generate a fermion, give fermion a mass. And it's, which is not a Higgs, which means you have more freedom to really put this flavor structure in and to get more dynamics going on with the mixing and stuff. There are some questions? Okay, so next thing we did a phenomenological fit to all the numbers of this, which fit to the realistic CKM matrix and quark mass. So we think it's a really peculiar symmetry structure. But there's also that SU4 symmetry, which actually ensure this little Higgs mechanism works. And we calculate this Kalman-Weinberger potential, and we find this thing is independent of Higgs VAV and nothing. So that means there's no quadratic or log divergent contribute to the Higgs, to the Higgs potential from one loop. But there is a finite piece to that, which actually gave a Higgs mass at 1 TeV. So we still have a little fine tuning problem, like 7%. And the two Higgs, if you remember, then this Patrick-Quinn symmetry could be embedded into that SU4. If you look at the nonlinear sigma model field, then that's a SU4 matrix. This Patrick-Quinn symmetry could be embedded in that, because the upper type Higgs and down type Higgs only couple to upper type quark and down type quark separately, and they don't really, they have some little breaking because after you generate the Higgs potential, but that's like irrelevant at a low energy scale. Okay, so this is our phenomenological fit. You can see there's a hierarchical number pattern here, which actually sort of remind you the hierarchy of the flavor mass, which has our normal quark mass, and there's CKM matrix.
How do you decide which component should be complex, or is it by choice, or it has to be that?
We try different things, and that's the most simple one.
But it's not uniquely defined, is it?
No. I mean, you could have those numbers at every element, but this is, we tried, I mean, it seems like just putting one complex phase there, it's enough to give the CP violation in CKM matrix. Because, I mean, you need to get a CKM matrix right, and CKM has certain amount of CP violation. That phase is the source of all the CP violation in your CKM matrix. So you can see how CP works in this model is by putting phases into those mass matrix, into this Spurian matrix. So we also have a whole bunch of new exotic big particles, because we have SU2 cross U1 to 2 gauge group. So except the normal SU2 cross U1 in standard model, we have one extra set of SU2 cross U1, which gives a W prime and Z prime, Z2 prime. And also we have heavy quark partners, just like what happened in little Higgs. But here we have three Dirac fermion as partners. We also have three exotic pseudo scalars here, which comes from the masons of that nonlinear sigma model field.
Alex, Has removed said prime up to 1 inch.
Has removed what?
Look for set primes, for C primes.
Yeah, they did, but
they're almost at 752.
I think what they were looking for is they assume a standard model coupling to leptons, but our this Z prime and the D double prime is not necessarily coupled to fermions the way standard model coupled. It could be like have a really small coupling to them. So that way it hasn't been ruled out. So, but this Z and the Z prime actually, well, they would mediating flavor changing neutral current
so
process at the tree level.
Can I ask you, so W was saying that W has the besides the left-handed coupling, also right-handed coupling.
Yeah.
So
it does.
I have a loop of a W with left-handed and right-handed, it can project on, say, internal fermion, right? So the beta as gamma can go with the proportionality to the top ones rather than the neutral ones.
They will have a contribution, but that's, we calculate it's really small.
Why is it really small? It should be large.
So it doesn't couple much. I don't know which specific channel you were talking about.
Say it's a big quark going to S quark via top W loop, right?
Uh-huh.
And now usually you have the same chirality of the vertices that the whole diagram has to be chirally flipping. But if it's the same left hand chirality, you cannot have a chirality flip on the top mass. But if you have left-right structure, you have a flip, a chirality flip proportional to internal fermion, which is now on top. So this 10 minus 3 will be, effectively in this diagram, will be multiplied by on top over on double, and B, which is a fairly sizable thing.
So I think the left, well, I think there's probably I didn't put number right here. Because W is actually doesn't really couple to right-hand fermion much. I forgot the number we calculated.
How am I just supposed to read this line, right-handed current?
I think there's a number missing here, something here. This should be a some number here and left-hand current. I forgot to, it's some typos here.
I guess
here.
What I'm trying to communicate, 10 to minus 3 for right-handed.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not such a tiny negligible.
That's right. I mean, it will also contribute to this box diagram of flavor turning neutral current, and that will be quite big. I agree. I don't think that number is right. I should fix that. So, okay, well, we calculate some of the, just because this Z and the Z prime and the Z double prime will, and the Z will mediate the flavor turning neutral current at the tree level. So you have a U and a D coupled to Z and goes to, well, U and D bar coupled to Z and goes to a D bar U. And that could be really big. So it's because we have three massless fermion without symmetry breaking, so all those dangerous channel would be suppressed by the fermion mass divided by cutoff scale, which is like 10 TeV, and for the U and D quark, the mass is like a couple of MeV, so that's that way it's well suppressed. So it's all come from because If we have massive fermion before this thing, the whole flavor turning neutral current suppression would be the cutoff scale, something like it will be the normally it won't be suppressed, but it's because it's everything comes from this spurion breaking. So it's well suppressed with low energy scale. And yeah, so just from this matrix number and this is the exchanging dimension 6 operator from Z and Z2 prime exchanging. Mm-hmm. And it all have acceptable flavor change in your discard, even though we are saying we only have the cutoff scale at 20 eV. So you might, I mean, this is some model normally people using, well, a lot of people using SUSY to give, to prevent, to suppress flavor change in neutral current is by they are having a U323 approximate chiral symmetry. And it's called minimal flavor violation. So they say all the flavor changing process is actually from this CKM matrix. But yeah, what we did is a little different from this. And we didn't assume there's this minimal flavor violation.
And you are still assuming a very hierarchical structure of approximate symmetry right at the time.
It's just
what? It's not the equivalence. But
yeah.
It's still somehow,
sure.
still as hierarchical as the Upalas.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to come, we're just saying this come from something else, but it got to come from somewhere. Yeah, and we, especially we actually have those dangerous channels, we are saying you can actually observe like a flavor change in your current, which are different from what people would predict in standard model, which is, yeah, well, I mean, we were not quite sure at first, but so we calculated all those channels. We're saying it's experimentally acceptable, but still different from standard model.
So what are the channels that might be the largest observables for this kind of model?
So I think it's, if you look at that, I mean, the same, there's non-zero here, which is like UND exchange, tree level UND exchange. And I think there are like a two others smaller than standard model ones. If people could identify the flavor change in neutral current involving third family, that could be more like a study, like in Barbar, they study like bottom quarks, and also BS gamma channel is another channel we look at. So if they could really measure those channels, then it could find those. They also, I mean, there's another signal of this model is a direct detection of the prime and the double prime. So people has bound of the Z-like particles. Like they are searching for Z prime, Z double prime, even, I mean, because in contact of SUSY, well, in context of the actual dimension model, you always have like a next one of your KK tower. And people study that, but they assume like a standard model like coupling. And they have the bound of like 1 TeV or something. But our Z is more weakly coupled. And also they are just looking, they mostly when they're searching for Z prime and Z double prime, they look for like a lepton channel, like a muon channel. But we only have the model for quarks. So the next step is to do this model in neutrino and electron muons. And so the point is, this model is not ruled out yet.
It's almost ruled out.
What?
No, this tensor minus three couplings, that's far from ruled out.
Yeah.
By direct production. The flavor constraints may be close.
Okay, the tensor minus three is put in by hand, so to speak.
No, it's. I mean, this Z prime. I mean, this is from like the how much it coupled to quarks.
Is this tensor minus three related to the hierarchical couplings that you put in to get hierarchical masses?
I don't think so.
Okay, so where is its smallest coming from?
It's from. From here.
No, this is the result, but.
Oh, you're saying which one?
Yeah. Also, I guess the top coupling is actually pretty large, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's larger than the others. It's actually, I mean, this result is from the wave function of your from how your standard model fermion talk to the heavy fermion.
Right.
And
right.
So those fermions are mostly localized at white sites because we put a big mass on black sites, and that big mass is actually basically the three massive Dirac fermion and the chiral massless fermion on white site. So this is mostly for quarks. So it hasn't been quite produced in accelerator, at least the acceptable lower rate producing them. There's one possible is like even if they are really a lot produced, and because they don't really couple to leptons, so when they're trying to pin down them by using leptons like a muon channel or something, and so they haven't found it. But this is, I would say, dangerous model because it has lower scale. If you're people completely explore all the physics below 10 TeV by using LHC, well, LHC could not go that high, but yeah. So we could be rule out in future 5 years or something. But if not, and then it's just to tell people it's possible to also look for this flavor things in LHC rather than what normally people would expect, because flavor, it might be at a God scale or something. Okay, so there's still, well, I mean, we could say we have a predicted flavor model, but that's not really true because we haven't included leptons and all those. There's still many works to do here. And also, we just have, the interesting thing here is we have a new set of symmetry which explore flavor. And also we say we could possibly see something at LHC, which at TeV scale, which could possibly tell people why flavor is the way it is. And another interesting thing about this story is it's saying flavor physics is actually very closely related to electroweak symmetry breaking. It actually takes couple all those fermions together and make them talk to each other and gave rise to CKM matrix. So, and there's still many things to do with this whole story. And one big issue here we need to solve is how figure out how lepton works in this whole model, because lepton also have really astringent bond on like flavor changing process, like a mu2-3e decay channel. And we are also curious about why this model works so well for such a low scale but still have the flavor changing neutral kernel suppression. Maybe that's something we could look for, could be implemented into the other model. And also we need to figure out the collider physics. And the neutrino is a different story. It might involve Majorana mass. And this story, it doesn't need to have actual dimension, but it has an actual dimension. It could have an extra dimensional interpretation. Yeah, that's all. That's all I got. And thank you.
The original reason for the business state model is to solve the fixed mass hierarchy. So it's supposed to replace the supersymmetric solution,
mm-hmm.
which has differences in mass. That's applying a lot of it with that.
Yeah, we have that.
Okay, so you have that. But from the LHC data, you're only not able to fine tune already.
Yeah, it's.
Because of these partners have been seen.
Yeah, non SUSY partner or the top partner has been seen. So I guess the take of these days is like people are like, see, okay, I guess nature has to be a little bit fine-tuned, so it doesn't really matter. A little bit fine-tuned.
What's a little bit?
What?
How much is that?
So in some SUSE model, people have been trying to build unnatural SUSE to see how much fine-tuning we really need. But clearly, because of current Higgs mass and current status in LHC, it means we just have to accept that nature is fine-tuned, like 20% C or 10%.
You lost the original motivation.
I guess 20% is better than 100% or 1,000%. And especially if you look at all the fermion and the gauge boson, they have a mass spectrum which is sort of, well, it's sort of like an evenly spaced. And if you're saying just this is the particle we see and there's some desert upon that and you're not going to see any particle, it just doesn't seem to make sense. I think they're going to find some new stuff there. Just to complete the story, but and that might solve the fine-tuning issue.
So far, we haven't seen anything new.
I guess so. Yeah, not concrete, not something concrete.
Right.
Okay.
Next situation.